Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
And Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Field Yates going to stop by in a little bit, catch up with our good buddy and NFL insider, Monica McNutt, our ESPN college basketball analyst, going to get us all hype and ready for the women's tournament that is tipping off during the show. Mind you, the Stanford Cardinals are going to be playing at 6 o'clock Eastern, and Chinee Ogwumike drives this car during that hour of the show. Chinee, are you prepared to try and multitask like that?
Swerve. We're going to be swerving the whole time. I'm going to have my whole game up on my second screen. Sorry, Shannon. I won't be able to look at your lovely face today, our producer, who usually is on my Zoom. I'm going to have the game up. And I would like to shout out Doug Brown, our excellent SportsCenter updater, because he gave also some good news of the day. Tara Vanderveer, Stanford women's head coach, won the Naismith Award this year for best coach. So thanks, Doug, for dropping that nugget into the update.
Light work for the all-time bad you-know-what Tara Vanderveer, record setter in every way, shape, and form. So we got that coming up. We got more of the news of the day, as you heard in that update as well. Major League Baseball moving their all-star game, and already a lackluster response by the Atlanta Braves, the hometown team that was supposed to host this all-star game, getting absolutely roasted on these internet streets. So we will get to plenty of that, but Chinee, we've also had a lot going on in the world of college basketball. We've got Mark Emmert out here yet again, and we've got the NCAA Women's Tournament in focus yet again, this time for a video malfunction. We'll get to all of that in the segment. You know, does college sports better than anyone, one and done.
So much to say.
Are you good? Like, do you need a minute to breathe? Do you need some water?
So little time.
I'm trying to balance a lot right now.
One and done.
Chinee, we'll start off with our good friend Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, met with a trio of college basketball players on Thursday who were asking him to adopt a temporary blanket waiver that would allow athletes to make money from name, image, and likeness endorsements. It was Isaiah Livers from Michigan, Iowa's Jordan Bohannon, and Rutgers' Geo Baker, the group that led the hashtag not NCAA property that we saw at the start of the tournament. And that group met with Mark Emmert, who, by the way, the players say they asked for several of their female counterparts to be included in Thursday's meeting, and Emmert declined. Him and the NCAA dispute that, but I digress. Emmert, in this spot, said he would also be willing to meet with female athletes as well. But one of the things they talked about in there, Chinee, was them asking Mark Emmert to endorse the idea that all NCAA schools should be required to follow Title IX and require schools to provide equal opportunities to support their male and female athletes. Emmert, they said, was receptive immediately, but also reminded the players that the NCAA is not required to meet Title IX standards. And he's technically right with that, Chinee. There was a court ruling back in 1999 that the Supreme Court heard that said and stated that the NCAA as an organization, just because it had schools that operated by Title IX paying dues, wasn't bound by it itself. But to say it out loud like that as if they're doing you some sort of a favor, to end that spot coming off of the tournament that they just had, coming off of the spot on their record that they just had, trying to put on these two tournaments and what a farce it was at the beginning and the start of the women's tournament, I'm baffled that that is something they're still going to bring up in that spot. Yeah, while factually true, but my God, do you need to say it in that spot, let alone that these players walked out of this meeting saying it was the usual what we had heard, a lot of talking but not expecting things to get done, Chinee. This is going to be the next step in the next wave for athletes in college. Getting a meeting was a great step, but clearly hearing their voices heard is going to be an entirely different thing. And this is on an issue that's a layup. This is happening whether Mark Emmert and the NCAA want it to or not. And so I'm just hoping that as we continue to see players pushing for all of this, that we can get some leadership in place that's actually going to value those voices and not just pay lip service to it.
Leaders that keep that same energy, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just crazy because the ambiguity with Title IX leads to the situations we've seen with LSU that had repercussions all the way to Kansas, right? Ambiguity, and to have the leader say that out loud, that sort of reinforces those negative systems of maybe things skating by where they absolutely should not. And you know who suffers the most from that? Women, unfortunately. Now, speaking of things that happen to be farces involving the NCAA, unfortunately, we all saw that a video was released from the NCAA where there was, you know, it was to promote the women's Final Four, and there was one missing element, an entire team, the Arizona Wildcats, that worked and fought tooth and nail. You know, I'm proud of Stanford, but more importantly, I back the Pack. This is a team that has been an underdog this season. They were not in the hype video for the women's Final Four, all three other teams, and then, oh, sort of forgot about Arizona. That's wild, no pun intended. And when I saw this, I'm not surprised, because there have to be systems in place where people see things and say this should not fly. And clearly we're seeing on a number of occasions, whether it's the weight room, whether it's the resources, and now the videos that go out on social media, there are not enough checks and balances in the system that sort of show and highlight how this game can grow. And so in contest of that, you know, people came to Erin McDonald, who I followed her entire career, you know, as a member of the Pac-12. And she said she watched the video, and this is one of the stars for Arizona. I rewatched it a couple of times. It was frustrating. I definitely took it as a sign of disrespect. Again, this is supposed to be coming from the system that is so supposed to uphold them and, you know, put them in the center spotlight. But instead, she has to deal with this as motivation, hopefully, the best form of it. And the crazy thing is, like, I'm thinking about Coach Adia Barnes, who is going to make history alongside Dawn Staley as the first Black women to be both coaching simultaneously in the women's Final Four. And she herself said things get missed sometimes and shouldn't be, because there are four teams that have worked really hard to get here. Stuff like that shouldn't happen. And it just really, it irks me, just because, you know, these moments to celebrate, like, that's sort of what you work for as an athlete. You work for getting to the Final Four and seeing yourself in the clips and seeing yourself on the court and being in those highlight videos. I remember a video of myself where I got blocked, I hate it, by Breonna Stewart, lived for years on ESPN. But at the same time, I was like, you know what? I was in the Final Four, so I'm good with it. I'm cool. And I just want to use this time to sort of shed a light on Erin McDonald, because, you know, she's a fantastic player, small but mighty. And they have a huge task going up against UConn, the juggernaut that they are. Pac-12 player of the year and co-defensive player of the year. She finished her senior season leading the Pac-12 in scoring and steals for the third straight season. When we talk about the men's side, the one and dones and how top tier talent tend to leave, she's led the Pac-12 in scoring and steals for the third straight season. And that is something that no one has ever done in the Pac-12 conference. She's a second conference player of the year, back to back seasons where she won that award. First player in school history to win defensive player of the year twice. First player. Oh gosh. Why did I do this to myself? First player since me, whatever. Oh my God.
Wow.
But anyways, so I know I hate that. To win conference player of the year and defensive player of the year. How awkward is that? But my point is, this is someone that people should follow and people should see. And so following her career, I've been able to really be inspired by what she's been able to do on the court. And it's unfortunate that the system that's supposed to uphold them and uphold these women and put them center stage is doing the exact opposite of that. Just saying, oh, we're good with one or two people. Like, that's really cool. We've got Paige and we got Stanford, the GOATs, and all that type of stuff. No, everyone needs to be seen, especially when they've earned that opportunity, starting with Arizona. So good luck tonight. I know we'll need it, especially in the pack. But good luck, and I think this team will use it as motivation, Junior.
Absolutely. Chinay Ngola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Motivation because they've put in the work and because they've earned everything that you just talked about there. And I think that's the offensive part of both of these things that we've talked about here, is you go out there with your play and you earn these rights and opportunities. You put in the work in those spots to get in those places. And so when you hear things like, or see things like that, or hear things like Mark Emmert, just snide little things like that reminding you, we're not technically bound by Title IX laws in here when you're the organization that's out here supposedly talking about how much this experience should matter and be valuable to everybody. Talking about how we missed the mark on what happened before the tournament, but then saying, oh, remember, we're doing this out of the goodness of our heart because we don't need to do it. You're not doing anyone any favors. Everyone in this spot that we're talking about has earned the right to be here with what they've done, not what you've said. It's ridiculous.
I can't believe I walked into that landmine looking at the Pac-12 stats.
It was incredible today. I mean, you don't have to lie. You planned it out there to make sure that we were all reminded what a baller you were heading into Stanford's game tonight. It's okay.
I was like, literally, like, oh, first time to be Pac-12 defensive. I was like, oh God, that's 2014. Oh my God, that's my year. Oh my God, that's my name. Oh God.
It's all happening. That is how it's done.
Not just buckets, but blocks, okay? Defense. Remember that, Shannon. Remember that, Cliff. Remember everybody, okay?
See? She brought it up because she wanted to check all of us in that spot. There's a little Stugatz in everybody. One and Done is brought to you by Napa. Whether it's next day delivery or getting involved in their local communities, Napa goes above and beyond to serve you because their motor never quits. That's Napa know-how. All right, now that we've gotten our NCAA juice is flowing, we'll head to the pros, because coming up next, we had big news out of Major League Baseball and a response that has already missed the mark. We'll get to why next. Chinay Ngola Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Chinay Ngola Jr., the podcast.
Into baseball's opening weekend as Mike Trout and the Angels host the White Sox. Coverage of Sunday Night Baseball begins at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app, and at 8:30 on ESPN. Mike Golic Jr., Chinne Igwumike, excited to talk to Field Yates in a little bit here. Find out if Penei Sewell's arms, the Oregon tackle, and likely top five draft pick are too short, because that's what I'm hearing going
around.
Gosh. Give me strength, Chinne, if I have to hear this BS about this guy. I swear. Monica McNutt's also going to stop by, who we love. Very excited to help her get us right for the women's Final Four starting tonight. And I think she's going to have to take the wheel, because Chinne is going to be getting her game face on Stanford, tipping off at 6
Look,
in the women's tournament.
I am ready, but I'll let my sis hold it down. Both of them, actually, coming up today.
I can say, going to be very excited. Yes, I can say, we'll get to some family business here very soon. But, Chinne, we know big news today out of Major League Baseball, as the Major League Baseball and Rob Manfred, their commissioner, announced Friday they are moving the 2021 All-Star Game out of Atlanta in response to a new Georgia law that has civil rights groups concerned about its potential to restrict voting access for people of color. So the All-Star Game and the draft are going to be moving out of Atlanta, Chinne. And we had Jeff Passan, our ESPN MLB insider, on earlier in the show. If you missed any of it, check out the podcast. He was right off the top of the show, and he talked about why Major League Baseball made this decision, knowing it had to do right by its players.
The right thing in this case also happens to align with some issues that they would have had they not done. Envision a scenario in which Mookie Betts says, I'm not going to the All-Star game because Major League Baseball does not support voting, and especially in this case does not support the people who it affects most, which are disproportionately people of color. Imagine the narrative that baseball does not support black players. I don't think Major League Baseball wanted that. I think in the end, it recognized that not only would this be the right thing to do, to follow the NBA with the All-Star game in Charlotte, to follow the NFL with the Super Bowl in Arizona, I think it was also the prudent thing to do in terms of making sure that your sport, as you go forward, is not seen as this anachronistic game that is stuck back in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s.
Chinne Igwumike Jr. here on ESPN Radio. How surprised are you hearing this from Major League Baseball, Chinne? Because we're not that far removed a few years ago from the NBA doing this with their All-Star game in Charlotte as the response to a bill there that was seen as discriminatory against the LGBTQ community. But now, for Major League Baseball to step at the forefront of this feels very different.
Yeah, I was extremely surprised, Junior, just because this is being proactive, right? And a lot of times when we see people being proactive, it's the players that step up and force the hand. What we saw in the NBA, what we saw in the WNBA. But for MLB, we know the demographics of that and the way that the sport has been historically. It's just a different battle. But at the same time, we all know that in 2021, everyone is brought together in ways unparalleled, whether it is technology, social media, or just interaction. Sports is at the intersection of society, and it's all about using platforms for power and for change. And so for the MLB to be proactive in making this decision, even taking pushback from one of their own teams. And Junior, I found this one line of the Atlanta Braves statement as a response to this happening very interesting. Unfortunately, businesses, employees, and fans in Georgia are the victims of this decision. The use of the word victim is pretty strange, because what truly is being victimized is not sport here. It's the human characteristic that a law presented that affects multiple people, and that even has greater magnitude. So I guess that's why we're seeing right now in social media a lot of dialogue, and most importantly, pushback to what the statement says, just because the idea is that sometimes we think and we talk and we operate, Junior, in the lens of sport, wearing jerseys, and we love to follow the game. But sometimes there are bigger things, and this is what the MLB got ahead of. But unfortunately, it's interesting when you see teams push back on that.
Yeah, it's always interesting in this spot, Chinne, who you're trying to serve with the things that you do, right? Because what Jeff Passan said about Major League Baseball and all of this, and by all accounts, Rob Manfred talked with current players, the MLBPA, and the Players Alliance. He mentioned former players like CC Sabathia involved in all of that. He could best sum that up by saying they read the room. They looked around at what had happened. They looked around at what players in their sport had seen from players in other sport. And they said, we're not going to be the runs wanting opposite to this when every other league is starting to move in that direction right now. Why do we want to be the ones left behind. So I'm very curious who the Atlanta Braves, when they came out with this statement, when they make clear in their statement, their Atlanta Braves press release said this was neither our decision nor our recommendation, and we are saddened the fans will not be allowed to see this event in our city. The Braves organization will continue to express the importance of equal voting opportunities, and we had hoped our city could use this event as a platform to enhance the discussion. They mentioned the part in there that you said about businesses, employees, and fans being the victims in that spot, Shanae. And when you look at that in that state that we know, I mean, we saw in this last election is a very complicated political landscape in that spot. You wonder who they think they're helping, because when you look at that in opposition to what Major League Baseball, the body that you're a part of, made in their decision, this seems like a wild place to all of a sudden be the one that's going to start to put up the stop signs and say, yeah, we're going. This statement to me just makes no sense. It doesn't ring like seem like they're reading the room.
And for those who might be wondering what is precipitating all of this, the governor in Georgia signed into law a bill that technically targets a lot of black and brown people per the demographics of who will be affected. It's now a crime in Georgia to give a bottle of water or a snack to someone waiting in line to vote. We know that, you know, in black and brown communities, most people have to wait in lines longer. Mobile voting is now illegal in Georgia with, you know, polling sites on wheels, a practice that has been used in Fulton County, which is a large black population there. Plus ballot drop boxes must now be located inside. And there are ways that if you're going to use that, you have to have a driver's license and state ID, and just the disproportionate ways people have access to providing that identification tends to hit disproportionately the black and brown community. So that's the context. That is not just, and it's not just a dialogue that has happened today or the last few days. As a member of More Than a Vote, this is something that we have been reacting to, and I've been getting multiple emails. This has been a hot button issue on our country, and now it seems like it's trickled down that urgency to the MLB as well.
And Jeff Passan mentioned this is a sport that relative to the other sports leans a lot more conservative, and so you knew this probably wasn't going to be something met with universal appeal the way it might be in other leagues where the players making up that league are primarily African American in these spots. But nonetheless, Major League Baseball stepped out in front of this spot, and it's going to be interesting to see what we hear, because that's what we heard from the Braves as a team. What do we hear from players as they start to step forward and talk about this? What do we hear from players on the Braves who are now going to be in a difficult cross-section of the response to all of this? We'll keep an eye out on that as we go along here. But again, Major League Baseball moving the 2021 All-Star Game and Draft from Atlanta over a recently passed Georgia voting law. Coming up next, though, we will get to the NFL and try and check in on what the hell the Packers are doing, and if we can expect big moves continuing from the New England Patriots as we head to the draft. We'll do all that after this word from 303 Products. Are you looking for professional-level protection for your car's paint? Offensive line-style protection, but without the cost that you'd pay for a professional detailer? New revolutionary 303 Graphene Nano Spray Coating provides just that. 12 months of protection, all with a simple mode of application. You can do it yourself in no time. It's so easy, even I can do it. Not a huge car guy in the world, 303 is perfect for me. It leaves your car's finish with insane levels of shine and depth, plus the water beating's crazy. Your car's never going to look better. It also helps keep your car looking that way for longer, too. The layer of protection helps repel dust and fights off water spotting. It does this by making water shed quickly from the surface and lowering the surface temperature, actually lowering the temperature so water doesn't end up drying on the paint. It's also great to use in your car's glass, wheels, and trim, too. It's now available at Advance Auto Parts and Pep Boys locations nationwide. Or you can learn more by visiting 303radio.com. Back after this with Field Yates on Shanae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
Shanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Shanae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Shanae Agwimike, we're presented by Progressive Insurance, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. And our guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline, and we are excited because we've had a lot of news going on here today.
Oh, yeah.
And it has been pretty heavy on a Friday, Janae. I'm not going
to really
lie.
It really has. I know, and this is not what I need to get my game time mentality up. It's 30 minutes till tip!
You say the Stanford women's hoops team getting ready to tip in 30 minutes. That's when we lose Janae officially on this show to that. And so to enjoy our time right now, to try and take her mind off that, let's talk some NFL with our friend at ESPN NFL Insider, Field Yates, co-host of the First Draft podcast, kind enough to join us on the Goodyear Hotline right now. And Field, I would like to sit here and talk with you about the people that were crazy enough to bring up Penei Sewell's arm length until I'm blue in the face because it's driving me insane right now. But I'm going to compose myself, and I'm instead going to ask you about a team that you know a lot about. Spend your time scouting with the New England Patriots. They've been aggressive this offseason, and in the latest mock draft from Todd McShay, he's got them moving up to 11 to take Justin Fields at quarterback. Do you think this New England Patriots team, and we've heard from Bob Kraft, who's not happy with the way they've drafted recently, might actually be in the market hunting a quarterback at the top of this draft?
Yeah, I don't think it's any mystery that the Patriots still need to acquire a quarterback at some point in the draft. The question is twofold. Is one, will it happen this year? And two, if it does, do they have the means to do so in the first round? Because it feels to me like the floor for the five quarterbacks we've been focusing in on so much is pick eight. Now, I know that Todd's most recent mock that we're referring to as the Patriots trading up to number 11. My own instinct is that it just feels hard for me to imagine that Justin Fields slides out of the top 10. But if the Patriots are able to move up just four slots and pay a more modest price compared to what the 49ers paid to move all the way up to pick number three and get Justin Fields, that to me would feel like one of the ultimate draft heists. He is such a talented player. The Patriots would be able to legitimately craft an offense around Cam Newton if he wins the job going into the season and not have to craft an entirely different offense for Justin Fields if they were to draft him and he were to eventually take over. I'm not saying they are identical players, but some of the things that we saw from Cam Newton last year as a runner are skills that Justin Fields has at his disposal. So I think that Justin Fields would clearly raise the upside in the short and long term for the Patriots, but there's also a scenario where a bridge quarterback spot could actually work out in the Patriots' favor.
Field, as someone that is for the first time going through the multitude of mock drafts, I feel like it's always appropriate for us, and I'm speaking of myself, to have sort of like a palate cleanser. There's been so much conversation. I feel like so much movement as well. Outside of quarterbacks one and two, Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson potentially, where do you see the conversation standing with Mac Jones, Trey Lance, or Justin Fields?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I haven't felt as certain about a prospect going number one overall as Trevor Lawrence of the Jaguars as I have since 2014 when I was doing my WNBA mock draft and you were coming out from Stanford that year today.
Oh,
and I had you, no doubt about it, going to the Sun first overall. So I feel really good about Trevor Lawrence. The rest of the quarterbacks, I think I can sort of piece together a general sense, right? I do think that Zach Wilson right now feels like a pretty comfortable fit for the Jets. I wouldn't necessarily go buy a jersey if I'm a Jets fan that says Wilson on the back of it, but I think that that's the way the winds are blowing right now. And there's been too much buzz for me to ignore the possibility of Mac Jones going to the 49ers at number three overall, whether I agree with that idea or not. And then I think what gets really interesting is what happens to pick four, because I think the Falcons are well equipped to be sort of take that pick and auction it off, because I think Trey Lance or Justin Fields is every bit worthy of the fourth overall selection. Atlanta has to make a decision about the crossroads of their organization. Is Matt Ryan the guy long-term? And when I mean long-term, I mean basically into the next two seasons beyond 2021, for which he's under contract right now. Because if he is, you might say, hey, let's trade out of four and potentially pick up really useful draft capital. And one of the most interesting dynamics, in my opinion, is that Carolina is probably one of the teams that's going to be most aggressive to trade up from their current slot at eight to number four. Would Atlanta want to trade away the fourth overall pick, knowing darn well that Carolina would be coming up for a quarterback, to open the door to Carolina getting a quarterback who could eventually haunt Atlanta for a decade or more? So I think we'll have four quarterbacks go off the board to begin the draft. I'm just not so sure who's taking that fourth quarterback as of right now.
Field Yates, our ESPN NFL insider, joining us on Chinay and Golic Jr., Mike Golic Jr., and Chinay Agumake. And Field, Aaron Rodgers is getting set to host Jeopardy for a couple weeks, which has been a nice sidebar for what's currently going on with his team. We heard CEO Mark Murphy saying he wouldn't address questions about Aaron Rodgers' contract and the team's apparent unwillingness to go with him and commit to him beyond the 2021 season. Are we missing something, or is this a pretty direct indication of how they feel about him beyond next year?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, like people, there's a lot, we are speculating a lot, but we can do so with the context of facts, right? So the Packers drafted a quarterback last year, and in the first round, obviously, in Jordan Love. It's definitely legitimate for a team to want a player to be groomed for a year, maybe two. But it feels like beyond 2 years, with the way that the rookie contract scale works these days, like, that to me feels like foolish business. If you wait 3 full years to start a quarterback like Jordan Love, you'd have to make a decision on his fifth-year option, which I know this is so far down the road, but still, you'd have to make a decision that could be like $24 million or $25 million with a consequence without never seeing a guy play a game of actual consequence as your starting quarterback. So I think the signs are starting to point more and more towards an inevitable divorce between Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. The question is how soon that comes. And I think Rodgers would prefer assurance in his career. I know Rob Domofsky, our great Packers reporter, has reported that several times now, is that he's the freaking MVP. Do we really want Aaron Rodgers going year to year and not knowing what his future is going to look like? It seems like a reasonable ask to want more than that. At the same time, if the Packers are intent on Jordan Love becoming their guy at some point, and some point could mean sooner rather than later, committing to Aaron Rodgers financially right now beyond what his current contract is going to cloud or muddy up their exit strategy a year from now or 2 years from right now. So it's complicated, but I do think that, you know, we should just prepare ourselves for the possibility of eventually, and I don't know what eventually is, but eventually Aaron Rodgers could be playing for somebody else.
And based on where the money's lining up, eventually could be sooner than any of us believe should be possible. Follow him on Twitter, at Field Yates. Check out the First Draft podcast. You'll see him on NFL Live and all over ESPN. Field, we appreciate the time, brother. We'll talk
Thanks,
to you next
Field.
Week, all right?
All right, guys. Talk to you in a week. Yep.
Field Yates, kind enough to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And by the way, oh, we're not going to do it now. We're not going to talk. We had the trains read up here again. I was excited to get to this one because I went by train tracks this past weekend while I was driving, and I thought of this, so it is effective. And a reminder, trains appear to be further away and moving more slowly than they are. If the signals are on, the train is on its way. And remember one thing, stop, because trains can't. I text Chanae and I text our producer, Shannon, when I saw those train tracks and the lights weren't blinking, so I knew I was good to go here. So listen.
Watch out for the train, unless it's the chugga-chugga James Harden train, okay?
I can say, if it's the James Harden
MVP train.
That
one cannot be stopped.
That one cannot be stopped. And all you want to do, just step by the side and get on, because you don't want to let this thing pass you by. But coming up next, how nervous should Chanae Igwumike be that Dawn Staley is waiting in the wings right now? We'll ask our next guest. Here on Chanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Help.
Chanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Chanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And the weekend preview is brought to you by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. We are about 12 minutes away from tip-off. The Stanford Cardinal and the South Carolina Gamecocks in the Women's Final Four in March Madness. And Chanae, I just got to take the temperature check. How are we feeling right now?
I'm numb, boss. I'm numb. You know that's my go-to. I'm feeling okay. I'm feeling okay. I'm confident. I think we're going to win this thing.
All right, well, let's figure out how confident you should be. We're delighted to go now to the Goodyear Hotline, where our ESPN basketball analyst, and you see her all over the place, hosting MSG PM over on the MSG Network. The great Monica McNutt, kind enough to join us here on Chanae and Golic Jr. Monica, how nervous should Chanae be right now with Dawn Staley and the Gamecocks rolling into this one?
Hey, y'all, and sis, relax, I think, kind of. Relax enough to know that your team is going to show up. This, by far, is going to be the best ball game tonight. And so I'm super excited, but I think you're good, Chanae. I really do think you're good.
I'm glad you think that, but the reality strikes. Obviously, this is a strength-on-strength matchup, sis. Monica McNutt joining us here on Chanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. But I want to start with this. Obviously, it's going to be a great back-to-back night for the Women's Final Four. But overall, Paige Bueckers has moved the needle this year when it comes to conversation with hoops, period. How impactful has she been to the game this year?
Incredible. And I think, you know, as your sister, Nneka, is a huge part of the Players Association for the W. The biggest part, I think, of what she's done is putting the pressure on the W to really reevaluate when you're eligible for WNBA status. And I think there's been some great reporting. I know Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi have both talked about it in different places. And I understand that it wasn't top of list in the last CBA, but Paige certainly causes you to double think, look, do a double take when it comes to that rule. But I mean, I literally this morning was looking to find out how to quantify that UConn doesn't have any seniors. Like, what's the youngest team to ever win a national title? And we couldn't quite pin that down, but our terrific stats and information team said that they have, by percentage, they're getting the most production from percentage since the 2000 women's champion. So this is a really young team with a lot of talent. While Paige is putting the pressure on right now, who's to say that next year Aaliyah Edwards doesn't have a crazy year and we're having the same conversation? So I think she's really pushing the needle forward in terms of the way we perceive the women's game overall.
Monica, I don't want to assume too much, but I'd imagine you're in that vein. Do you think that players in the women's side should be able to go one and done and enter the WNBA after their freshman season?
I do, and I think back to when I was playing, and I remember Epiphany Prince leaving Rutgers to go play overseas until she had met the WNBA standards. I definitely think you should have the option. Now, here's the deal. Paige is pushing this narrative forward, and rightfully so, but we haven't seen a Paige ever, right? And so I'm not concerned about this all of a sudden lowering the level of play in the WNBA and players being too young. We're talking about the elite of the elite that will be capable of doing that. But I think having the option speaks to the growth of the game, and that is important.
It's extremely important. Monica McNutt joining us, basketball analyst on ESPN. You said MSG PM. She's on SportsCenter AM. She's doing everything in between, ACC in between. We love you and appreciate you, sis.
Girl.
Now, can you just preview both of the games tonight, starting with Stanford, South Carolina, and then following up with UConn, Arizona?
All right, Stanford, South Carolina, you mentioned it, Janae, strength on strength. It's like, do you want the depth of offense or do you want this stout defense that the Gamecocks present? You know your squad coming in shooting 38% from three. Statistically, though, this is where I think they have the advantage over all the teams left in the field. Statistically, they have the most balance. Their top two scorers make up less than 40%, and I believe their top three scorers make up less than 59% of the overall offense, and they're the only team that does that. We saw in the final, your girl Ashton Preshtal, like, she's averaging like 5.6 points a game. She went 6 for 6 and had 16 points and really changed the complexion of that ballgame. So I think their overall depth is what gives them the edge. And it's not as if they don't play defense. They're not leading the country in blocks the way South Carolina is. But I think they play solid team defense. Anna Wilson was co-defensive player of the year, so they know how to get up and put the pressure on when it's called. And I personally love what Cameron Brink brings to this squad. In fact, I thought she was huge in kind of keeping them in the ballgame in the beginning of the matchup with Louisville. On the other side, South Carolina, we know they made history with that offer that they kept Texas to in the fourth quarter. And whether or not you subscribe to Texas having used up all the energy they had to pull off the upset against Maryland, they still held them to 0 points. And in the second quarter, they held them just to 12, which was, I believe, the lowest scoring quarter we've had at the Elite Eight level. They lead the country in blocks. I think Aaliyah Boston is the highlight. But when you look at this squad, you got to think of Letitia Amin here coming off the bench, who had 9 blocks in that ballgame. She's extremely versatile on the defensive end. Bree Bill and Victoria Saxon, to me, are really the glue and grit players that kind of keep that defense to what it is. They don't shoot a ton of threes, though. And so I think if they make the concerted effort to feed the ball inside to Aaliyah Boston, which they rightfully should, I'm curious to see the matchup of Brink, Belibi, what's my girl, Preshtal coming in, because they have the depth. They can come at it in waves. I expect her to still have some numbers, but again, I just think the overall depth of Stanford is what's going to bode well for them. The other matchup, UConn has a significant height advantage. They obviously have Olivia Nelson-Ododa and Aaliyah Edwards at 6'5 and 6'3 in the paint. I believe Lauren Ware is the biggest player for Arizona.
And you're right, Monty. We don't have much time left. Sorry to interrupt. But last but not least, who you got winning it overall? You were just dropping bars.
Well, I was into this, right? I got Stanford. Sorry.
Oh, there we go. That's all I needed to add.
Pass the dismount there. Monica, we're sorry. It's the heart out. It's not you. You are wonderful. Our great college basketball analyst, Monica McNutt, kind enough to join us here on the show. We will get ready for tip-off because she has prepared
us.
And we'll do it next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.